Welcome to Backroom Talk.
Functional bodybuilding, Carl. It's the topic of today's conversation.
FBB for Marcus is going to look a lot different than, you know, FBB for someone that is less than a year into this, you know, exercise thing.
I think sometimes we are quick to brush aside aesthetic goals and say, you know, there's got to be some deeper reason behind it. It's not a good enough reason to come in and train. And I don't like that. Like, I don't like that flat out dismissal of people's desire to look a certain way.
To listen to more Backroom Talk, be sure to subscribe. Learn to design personalized programs with the OPEX system of coaching by heading to opexfit.com.
Functional bodybuilding, Carl. It's the topic of today's conversation. And to give a little bit of context to people that are listening, we released an educational guide, would have been last week by the time this thing airs, talking about principles of FBB, going into some cool avatars and program designs. And we will make sure to link that in the show notes and description so anyone can go back and download that after they've listened. But for today, would really like to get into where FBB came from. Maybe some of the good and the bad in execution, because, you know, whenever some new hot style of training hits the scene, people are going to take it in a positive direction and they're going to take it in maybe a not so positive direction as well, just jumping on the bandwagon. So I think we have to dig into that. And just more general conversation around like a working definition of how we see functional bodybuilding and what that term really means.
Let's start with the definition of it and kind of bounce some ideas back and forth. And like we talked about before, it's tough to, you know, wrap this whole thing around like a sentence where it's like, this is what it is, right? Like, that's like trying to say like, what is fitness, and trying to like explain that in, you know, 6 or 7 words. It's just tough, but I do think it's beneficial to try to do it. So very similar to our previous conversation, you know, when we look at what is a working definition of functional bodybuilding, to me, my personal opinion on that is you take principles that have been around for decades in bodybuilding and you utilize those principles to fit whatever your function is, right? And your function is what you do in the gym, what you do in life, what your capabilities are, so on and so forth. And like you said, it is this hot training method right now, and people find it really sexy right now because it's different from what they've done specifically in functional fitness. Because what was always scoffed at in the functional fitness world in 2009, right? It was like bicep curls. We're like, why are you doing that? That's not functional. So now, you know, people are starting to incorporate the bicep curl and more isolated exercises inside of their program design while still having the ability to do Metcons and do gymnastics and do all of the things that they love in functional fitness, right? So I think it's hot in that world because it's new and it feels different and it's nuanced. And anytime we do something new in exercise, we see new results, right? So people are doing it, and they're starting to see their body composition change, and they're like, wow, this is outstanding. But if you look at someone that, you know, has been doing bodybuilding for years and years and years, and they do it, they're just like, yeah, I'm just doing like a different version of what I've always done. And I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing. I just think that's reality for a lot of people that are doing quote unquote functional bodybuilding.
Yeah. I mean, it's like any fitness trend. Nothing comes from nothing. Nothing is really new in this fitness space that we work in, or really that groundbreaking when it comes to like actual execution in the gym. But it is this like blending and mixing of two different worlds that maybe hadn't really been together or respected one another before. And it's funny that comment you make about the bicep curl. I remember when the bench press wasn't functional in CrossFit, let alone the bicep curl, which is so crazy.
Yeah, that's we'll dig into it and where it came from and all of that. And I think we'll kind of tell that story and get into how we've always thought those things were functional, right? But we'll save that to that point of the conversation.
Do you think people are trying to have their cake and eat it too, with the desire to get, you know, results from bodybuilding, hypertrophy, look good, and then also be able to do like metcons, maybe higher skill work, stuff you'd see like in a functional fitness gym?
What do you mean by that? Like, do you mean, are you saying like, do people think that they're just going to go into the gym and acquire all these new skills and aesthetic gains essentially by doing a program like this?
Will someone be as successful in functional fitness as they would be if they just did functional fitness, or as successful in bodybuilding and like the results you get from bodybuilding if they just did like more classic bodybuilding style training?
Gotcha. The answer to that is the more focused you are in a particular area, the higher your ceiling is going to be. So you're not going to see, Ronnie Coleman 10 years ago trying to do functional bodybuilding. He's like, I need to get as big as I possibly can. I'm going to do classic bodybuilding, classic hypertrophy training, and that's all I'm going to do. Like, anything else would have been a waste of time, a waste of training time, right? So the same goes to a competitive CrossFitter, right? If a competitive CrossFitter was like, I want to win the CrossFit games, it's like, no, they're not doing a bunch of, you know, bicep curls in an intensification phase while they're getting ready for a pre-competition phase. It's like, that shit should have been done years and years and years ago. And those are the people that we talk about, oh, you need to have that base built. And if you need to do bodybuilding, you don't have that base built, right? So let's build that base right now and then get ready to, you know, hit all of the high intensity stuff and get ready for competition. So no, I don't know if people are trying to have their cake and eat it too, but my opinion is you can't, you know, be the best at either one of those things if you're trying to do both of them.
Yeah. I mean, I love to ask you these leading questions, Carl, because I get, you know, responses like that, but ultimately what it helps us arrive at and where it helps the conversation move is like, who is the person who's not trying to push like aesthetics to their limit, who's not trying to push absolute, you know, performance in the functional fitness world or inside of CrossFit, who is sitting in, you know, some middle ground of that, where they want to be able to do these functional activities. They want to be able to, you know, look good and get some, you know, aesthetic results from their training. So yeah, who is that person? Like, what are their goals? Who is the person that is ripe for functional bodybuilding?
I think Marcus hits on this so effectively. So Marcus Philly, right? Like, he's pushing that functional bodybuilding message forward in a very, very effective way right now. And I think he explains it really well. And, you know, he's been that person that has made that pivot. And now he is living that life, right? Where he's just like, I don't care if I don't snatch 285 pounds anymore. I'm okay with snatching 205 pounds, looking good and feeling good on a day-to-day basis. And there's a lot of like, you know, backroom stuff that he's even talked about with like hormonal issues and stuff like that when he was really pushing high intensity. And he's utilizing, you know, these principles in his own practice, and he's pushing these things across to, you know, clients that are working with him and people that are signing up for his training program and going to his webinars and all that stuff. So he's doing a really good job pushing that message forward. So, you know, go check him out. I'm sure, you know, if you're listening to this, you know who he is and you probably follow Marcus, right? It's like, look at the stuff he puts out, because he puts out some really good content. But in my opinion, the person is either someone like Marcus or someone that thought that they needed functional fitness, high intensity functional fitness to be healthy. And then they started to realize, I don't need that shit, right? But I liked doing it, right? Like, I liked, you know, doing metcons. I liked, you know, putting a barbell over my head and one fluid movement. I liked trying to get muscle ups or doing muscle ups. I liked all that stuff, but I also want to look good and feel good. So that person would be a great person to, you know, jump into a design like this, or to get a coach to design them a training program that is meant for them, right? Like, we'll stick to that, that is meant for them, but use these functional bodybuilding principles.
Before we get too far into like the weeds talking about program design for functional bodybuilding, I would like to just step back and talk about its history and, you know, where it came from. And obviously there are a lot of ties with the OPEX crew and with Marcus. So could you kind of tell that story for us, Carl?
Yeah, so I'm telling it secondhand because I wasn't there. But where it came from was it came from James's office, right? Mike Lee, who used to be with us as a remote coach, and James, they came up with that thing. And the test subject was Marcus, right? It was Marcus. It was like, you know, he got burned out. He was doing, CrossFit games and then grid and then, you know, really pushing performance. And he just like bogged down like big time, really hard. And they were trying to figure out like, what does this guy now need? Like, how do we hit reset without, you know, making him a worse athlete? Because at that time, he still wanted to compete, right? He's just like, I just need to figure this out. Like I have a bum shoulder, like my guts are all jacked up. My hormones are fucked, right? Like he was just in a bad spot. So, you know, James and Mike sat down and they designed this thing for Marcus, and they're just like, hey, you know, let's pump the brakes a little bit. And the way that they did that was they just used bodybuilding principles, right? They're like, let's go. And James talks about it all the time, bipolar training. That's what it was. It was like on this end of the spectrum, it was high intensity. It was for time. It was not for quality. It was win, win, win. It's like they realized that they needed to go all the way to the other side of the spectrum where it's like for quality, great movement, really good contractions, calm the CNS down a little bit, but still give him work, right? Because he wanted to work. He was just a competitor and an athlete. And that's who Marcus was and still is, quite frankly, right? And they just built this program and Marcus started feeling really good. And Marcus was like, what the hell is this? And, you know, the conversation started really flowing. And, you know, the first functional bodybuilding course was created off of that little test subject and off of that little, those experiences that they went through. But when we look back at it, right, it's like, there was nothing nuanced about it. It was just like, it was just putting a name on it. That was it, right? It was putting a name on it. And we talk about it, you know, fairly often, right? Like, you know, how I got introduced to OPEX and James, and it was through my ties with Charles, right? With Charles Poliquin. And, you know, a lot of the principles that, you know, Poliquin extrapolated from, you know, the Russians and the Europeans and all of those guys, and, you know, brought over to North America for a lot of people. Those are the things that started to come out of the woodworks with functional bodybuilding, right? It's like, you know, the bench press is now a thing, right? It's like, you know, now it's a single arm bench press. It's like, you know, if you've been in that world for any amount of time, you're just like, yeah, it's always been a thing. But you introduce that to the functional fitness world and they're like, that's new. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm like, they just weren't in that world, which is okay. But they were just introduced to that world. It was like a true meshing and marrying of bodybuilding and functional fitness, which is just such a beautiful thing, right? So like, you know, if I look back at, you know, what my training looked like in 2006, nah, later than that, 2008, 9, 10, it was that, right? It was like, it was figuring out, you know, how to still be in really good shape metabolically while still, you know, doing a lot of bicep curls and doing a lot of bench press and, you know, still caring about, you know, how I looked and aesthetics and stuff like that. So it was the same thing, right? But those guys just did a really good job of packaging it and putting a brand behind it, not a brand, a name behind it. And what functional bodybuilding is it's like I said, you know, 10 times already, the meshing of those bodybuilding principles with OPEX CCP principles and energy systems training and concurrent training and, you know, avoiding interference and all that stuff, right? Like all that stuff lives inside of the FBB principles.
For coaches that want to like really ramp up their education around functional bodybuilding and, you know, perhaps they are coming from that CrossFit functional fitness background, maybe they're a CCP coach and they really want to like, you know, narrow in on FBB, would you advise them to, you know, go back through the archives, check out Poliquin's work, pursue that kind of education, read those books?
Yeah, definitely. You know, read the Poliquin principles. PICP isn't what it used to be. So I wouldn't recommend going through PICP. I'm not saying it's not a great course. I just can't recommend it because I think it's a different course than what we went through back in the late 2000s. But yeah, dig back into that stuff and look at, but just pull out like super training, right? Like pull that stuff out. It's all in there, right? It's all these principles are inside of super training. They really are. So just looking at those and, you know, if you're a CCP coach and, you know, you're really starting to think about, not thinking about FBB, right? But you're thinking about like bodybuilding principles and how do I incorporate it? Look back at those things, right? Like those, you know, when we do put out that education, we're just going to be saying what they said back then. We're just going to be saying it in our language and we're going to tell coaches how to wrap that around the CCP methodology. That's it. Right. We're like you said at the beginning of the call, we're not going to create anything. Right. And we're not going to be like, oh, we're OPEX and we're creating all of these awesome principles and we're the first ones to do it. It's like, no, we're just taking what others have said really, really effectively. And we're going to package it specifically for our coaches to fit within our methodology. And that's if you want to dig really, really deep into that stuff. But I think coaches need to realize that, you know, this, like, it doesn't, Marcus is doing an awesome job branding this thing, right? Like an awesome job. And he will continue to do an awesome job branding this thing. But as a coach, you don't have to try to mimic, right? Like, you know, whatever FBB is for you and your clients, make it just that, you know, like, and we talk about you and your jiu-jitsu endeavors all the time, right? It's like, you know, FBB for Georgia is going to look different than FBB for Carl, right? Because our functions are just different, right? So don't make it too complicated as a coach, right? Like, don't think that exercise selection needs to be this crazy nuanced thing that, you know, has to look really sexy and it has to change every day and all of that, because now the intentions behind doing functional bodybuilding are, in my opinion, misaligned. Because if you're not working toward a very specific outcome and everything inside of your A, B's and C's is there for a specific reason, then what the hell are you doing? You're just doing something to say that you're doing it. So that's not to discredit anyone that, you know, puts a lot of time and effort into this thing, but I think we just can't make it something that it doesn't need to be and have intentions behind why you're doing stuff for yourself or with your clients.
Yeah, I think it was great to kind of look back and again talk about those early days of James, Mike, and Marcus working together, because it explains those early FBB programs that we saw coming out, right? They were designed for Marcus, who was a high-level athlete, who already had a huge training background, who, you know, had mastered these advanced skills and was able to do a bunch of really novel, exciting things. You know, you look at those programs, they're highly complex. There's a ton of volume inside of them, you know, a bunch of odd object work, like really cool variations on gymnastic skills. And I think a lot of people see that and they're like, that's functional bodybuilding, right? Functional bodybuilding has to be this novel, exciting, crazy, changing every week, every day kind of thing. But that was FBB for Marcus as a CrossFit athlete trying to rehab from some shit. Functional bodybuilding for your everyday person absolutely has to meet their function. And that's not the function of Marcus Philly, the CrossFit athlete.
Yeah, man, such a good point. I was watching the video that you and James did. Great job, by the way, the Mythbusters video. I was watching that yesterday and you guys were kind of talking through kind of, I can't remember the exact point. You guys were talking through like what the literature says and how people implement that thing, right? Like HIIT, you guys were talking about HIIT specifically. And James said something along the lines of, you know, there's nothing in the literature that says that it needs to be at this exact effort, right? Or this output needs to be sustained over, I think you mentioned the Tabata piece, right? So 20 on 10 off times 8. It was just like, yeah, just like go and do it. And I think we can look at FBB the exact same way, right? Where it's like you just said, FBB for Marcus is going to look a lot different than, you know, FBB for someone that is less than a year into this, you know, exercise thing. So I think we have to look at, you know, going back to the definition of it. And that's why it's so hard to define, right? Because it's like, how do we know you're doing functional bodybuilding versus this person and they're not doing functional bodybuilding? There's no way to know by just looking at a program, you know, one next to another. And I think that's what a lot of coaches are trying to figure out. They're trying to figure out, how do I design functional bodybuilding? It's like, you can't, it's not like a thing, right? Like, that's like, it, depending on who the person is going to define what the program, what's inside of the program. So there's no way to, you know, just look at two programs without context and be like, hey, this is functional bodybuilding. And when we start talking about, you know, functional bodybuilding for that person that is less than a year into training, their program is going to be designed around what, you know, for, based on our principles. Let me just ask you that. What do you think that their program is going to be designed around if they're less than 1 year into training?
So like developing motor control and muscle endurance, making, you know, focusing on isolated parts before patterns, you know, good time under tension, staying away from dynamics. What else am I missing? What would you add there?
That's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. So functional bodybuilding for that person is going to look like, you know, the dumbbell bench press, the bicep curl, the lat pull down, like they're going to be focusing on what you said, right? Like motor control, right? So functional bodybuilding for someone that's 15 plus years into this thing, now that can look really sexy, right? Because they have like, they have all of these motor control capabilities already checked off. They have their strength endurance capabilities all checked off. And now these people are doing like, you know, chipper grinder pieces with, like you said, like odd objects going over their shoulder while they're on, you know, a ski erg and a bike erg. And, you know, they're doing strict muscle ups and they're doing like that shit looks really sexy. And it's like, but I want to do that. And it's like, it's always a tough conversation when you're like, but you can't do that. You're not capable of doing that. We need to do sets of strict pull-ups, you know, and we need to do dumbbell bench press, and we need to do split squats, and we need, you know what I mean? It's like, we need to do that stuff. We need to do that for years and years and years before you can do the big grinder pieces. And those people aren't interested in that. And they're just like, well, fuck you. I'm just going to go and do those grinder pieces and post about it and say how much fun I'm having doing FBB. And then you and I will probably look at that and be like, ah, man, those people probably shouldn't be doing that. But that's not a hit to, you know, what they want to do and they want to have fun in their program, or, you know, what FBB is and, or isn't. It's just like, we have to look at what this thing is on the surface. And on the surface, it's, should you be doing something versus not? And do you have really good intentions behind what you're doing or not? And are you capable of doing what you're doing or not? And if the answer is an or not on any of those, it's like, yeah, just don't do that. Take a step back, right? Take a step back. Don't be in such a freaking hurry and, you know, build those capabilities up so you can do the sexy grinder, chipper, Metcon things.
It's a hard pill to swallow for some people. Like, I've had this conversation with a number of clients, Carl, who, you know, they're on Instagram. They see the cool FBB workouts. They want to do that stuff. Like, it looks exciting and awesome to them, especially when they have that CrossFit background. And then they're looking to get into, you know, more aesthetics and their goals have shifted. And it's hard as a coach sometimes not to give them what they want, because you feel that pressure to keep your client happy. You don't want to lose them, you know, but taking a hard stance and staying true to your principles, I think, is the only way to feel good about yourself. Because if you do give in and you give them that fancy kettlebell flow that, you know, isn't really actually doing anything for them and their goals, 4 weeks in, you're like, why am I doing what I'm doing? I know this isn't going to get them results. And they're going to, you know, call me out on that in a couple of months when things haven't progressed like they ultimately want them to do. And it just feels bad. Like, it makes me feel dirty. I feel like I have to go and take a shower when I make that mistake. And it's totally a trap I fall into sometimes still.
But Georgia, you know what we have to do though, is we have to also take a step back and look at, cause we're biased people as well, right? Like we have our biases, and who are we to say that our biases are correct? And I'm not saying that they're not, right? But I'm just like, you know, who are we to say that our biases are incorrect? So when our clients ask us that stuff, I think it's worth their time and our time to have a conversation around it, right? Like, what does functional bodybuilding mean to you? Like, what do you think it is, right? Like, this is my definite, like I proposed my definition. I would ask them what their definition is. And if they're just coming to you and they're saying like, hey, I want to do more functional bodybuilding, let's just ask what that is in their opinions. What if in their opinions, they're just like, oh, I just want to do more isolated exercises, right? It's like, okay, cool. I'm on board with that. Let's do it, right? Or if they're like, you know, I want to do the grinder chipper Metcons with heavy load and complex gymnastics. And they're that person that has less than a year of training experience. That's such an easy conversation. It's like, okay, let's try this. I'm going to give you a piece. I'm going to give you this piece on Friday, and we're going to get in all your good work. And then we're going to end that day with this grinder chipper Metcon with complex gymnastics. And we know in our heads, this person can't even do 5 pull-ups, right? And we're going to give them this chipper and we're going to ask them to do 25 pull-ups, right? And they're going to fail. They're going to fall on their faces. And it's like, you know, am I a proponent of like setting clients up for failure? No, but is that person going to die by us giving them the wrong thing? Probably not. Right? So it's like, fuck it. Let's give it to them. And let's recap how that thing went afterwards. And maybe they're like, you're a terrible person. You gave me the wrong prescription. Or maybe they're like, I get it now. I get it. You had me do all this work and then you wanted me to do 25 pull-ups and I couldn't do it, right? Like I couldn't do it. I felt like crap and I felt shitty about myself after. I felt out of shape and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, cool, no problems, right? Like we can still give you pieces that feel like that, but what's inside of those pieces can't be dynamic, sexy gymnastics pieces because you're not able to do those yet. Is that a goal to be able to do those? If it is, cool. Let's have a conversation around it. And let's talk about what the progression could possibly look like to get there. You know, so maybe we just give people a bunch of shit they shouldn't be doing and have them figure it out for themselves. I don't know. Right. But, you know, I do think that we still do have our own biases as well. And I'm not saying that you're saying like, we don't have conversations with clients. We tell them we know best and you do this, but maybe we have to be more open-minded as well.
Yeah. I think that's such a good point. And it's such a good education opportunity for the client. And then also for the coach to go through that process and have that conversation after. And a key point is that you can't just give them the work and then not talk about it. You know, if you put something in there purposefully, you have to make sure you're actually having a conversation afterwards and, you know the questions that you need to ask that client to help them, you know, arrive at whatever the outcome you're looking to arrive at is and open up that, you know, avenue for conversation. And I think as well, like just realizing that people might see an exercise that looks really cool and they're just not really thinking about like what the dose is from that or what the outcome is going to be from doing that for weeks and weeks at a time. And when you have a conversation about like what the exercise is and what that outcome is ultimately probably going to be for them, that might help, you know, connect the dots and help them be more open-minded or not. And then you try it. And like you said, if it doesn't work out and they don't get the results that, you know, you want them to, and they want them to, then you get to go back to that initial conversation and say, you know, maybe we try it my way next time.
Yeah. Yeah. And those conversations can open up some really cool goal pieces, right? Where if someone does say, hey, I want to be able to do these things, it's like you explain like, hey, this might be a little bit longer of a journey than either one of us, are comfortable with or, you know, would prefer, but it could be fun, right? It's like, you know, let's learn how to do some of these cool skills, right? Let's, you know, if the goal is to do, a 50 foot handstand walk at the end of a workout one day, what does that mean, right? It's like, we're gonna have to work on being able to flip ourselves up inverted and to walk on our hands, right? Under fatigue. So that might actually be a year plus process to be able to get there. And it's like, some clients might be like, oh man, that sounds really cool. I would really enjoy, going through progressions to learn those things. And then that's kind of a constant in the program for a year. And then you have this like workout where you're like, this is the thing that we've been wanting to accomplish for the past 12 months, and they do it. And there's high fives and everyone feels really good about themselves. And, you know, they're more connected to their program and all of that. And they're like, okay, now what's next? And there could be some really cool things that come from that. So I'm not saying like we shut clients down and say, nope, you're not capable of that. But I think, you know, us being honest and having those conversations could open up some really cool goals or, intended outcomes that some clients could look forward to.
Yeah. And I think when I reflect on my past experiences and, you know, some things I've observed around me as well, a lot of the times when coaches shut things down, like that 50-foot handstand walk, it's because they're not actually comfortable progressing that client from where they are today to what that 50-foot handstand walk is going to be, you know, in 18 months from now. Like, they actually don't know the answer from how do we take this person who can't hold this, you know, 30-second hollow position to be able to walk on their hands and do that. Like, that's such a mind stretch, both for the client to think about that long-term progression, but then ultimately for the coach to actually be able to explain and execute on that. Like, that's kind of scary to think about. And especially if things go wrong, like, you know, you get 9 months in and they're not progressing like you want them to, that's a little nerve-wracking. But I think there's so much opportunity for growth and learning in practicing that with clients, in being open to, you know, laying out ideas and progressions and getting the opportunity to put it into practice. Like, how cool is that to get to, you know, see things play out in real time?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think going back to like, you know, even coaches, well, all coaches have their own biases, right? I think when a lot of coaches shy away from something, it's because they don't feel they're competent to get their clients there. So they're just like, and this might even be unintentional, but they're just like, no, let's not do that. That's not for you, because it's something inside of them and they're just not confident, you know, taking that plunge and working through that stuff. And we've all been there, right? Like, we've all been there with clients that are like, you know, oh, I want to compete in a triathlon. And it's like, oof, man, I don't have a lot of experience personally and, you know, training for a triathlon. And I've never coached anyone training that was training to do a triathlon. But it's like, let's use that as an opportunity to learn, right? Like, let's learn, you know, how to coach those clients. And, you know, I know I've been in that situation before where I did have that triathlete and I'm like, oh shit, how do I do this? Right. And I just figured it out. I remember I actually had a conversation with James, that was probably 10 years ago, about some really good, principles around, coaching triathletes. But yeah, I think we have to look at those as opportunities to sharpen our game a little bit as coaches and to broaden our horizons, if that's something we want to do. I also don't, you know, blame the coach that's like, yeah, I don't want to get into that world because I'm not interested in that at all. It's like, cool, just don't tell your clients that you're going to get them really good at that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's where you got to refer out. You got to have a network of coaches around you that have their specialties, and, you know, you can push them in direction of one of your peers if needed.
Yeah.
So one thing I want to hit on before we wrap up this conversation, Carl, is the pursuit of aesthetics, because a lot of people are doing functional bodybuilding because they've seen a really good looking body on Instagram and they want to look like that, right? And I think a lot of people full stop come into the gym because they want to look and feel a certain way. They want to drop some body weight. They want to see their abs. They want bigger arms, whatever it might be. And a lot of the time, you know, I wouldn't say we take like a hard stance on this, but I think sometimes we are quick to brush aside aesthetic goals and say, you know, there's got to be some deeper reason behind it. It's not a good enough reason to come in and train. And I don't like that. Like, I don't like that flat out dismissal of people's desire to look a certain way. I think people have to be allowed to have those goals. But of course, we have to kind of peel back the layers with them and work on, you know, why they want to look a certain way, why they want bigger calves, you know, why they want a bigger butt. Like, what's that going to bring them and get them at the end of the day? So
I can tell you one thing. I'll tell you one thing you'll get them. No, I'm joking.
I thought you were actually going to tell me one thing, Carl. I was waiting.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to do that.
So yeah, any thoughts on that?
On just aesthetics and that being the goal?
Yeah.
No, I mean, gosh, I've lived a lot of my life where aesthetics were the main goal. And I don't think that I was like, you know, one of those maligned people that had, you know, really unhealthy exercise and nutrition behaviors because of it. So I do think that aesthetics are a very realistic goal, and it has to be a realistic goal because there's a large percentage of the population that that have that goal when they get into fitness. And if that's what brings them over to us, awesome, right? But I do think there's always that piece that we have to look at where, you know, as fitness coaches, it's our jobs to do what you said and dig a little bit deeper. Because if we take every client's goal at face value 100% of the time, we're not doing them a service, right? Because there are some clients that I'm sure we've all worked with that had malaligned aesthetics goals. And, you know, when you ask them the question of, you know, what is a good aesthetic profile for you? Like, what does that look like? Here are your numbers, right? Like, we have pictures of what you look like right now. We have your body fat percentage. We have your lean body mass. We have all of these data points. When are you going to say I'm good? Right. And the client that can't answer that, that's like, I don't know. It's more of like a feeling. I want to feel good about myself. That's when not a red flag, but that's when we have to really deepen the conversation. Because that's when we're like, is this actually an aesthetic thing? Or is this a self-confidence thing, an acceptance thing? Are you trying to impress someone? Like, what is this really? But that client that says like, you know, oh, I look at, you know, this picture of myself and, you know, you can kind of tell in the umbilical, you know, I have excess body fat and I just want to get rid of that. Like, that's very specific. That's a very targeted goal. So we could be like, okay, once that excess body fat is gone, we can kind of like check the box of like, okay, we've accomplished that aesthetic goal. And then now we can continue and move on. Or when you pull up their in-body sheet and they're like, ah, man, I felt really good when I was 15% body fat and I'm sitting at about 17 and a half or 19% body fat. I just want to get back to 15. And then, you know, I'm not going to push aesthetics. I don't need to be in a caloric deficit, blah, blah, blah. Those are so targeted where it's like, okay, let's roll, let's hit these goals. But like I said, at the beginning, if they're just like, I don't really know, right? I just want to keep going. Those are the clients where we get their body fat down to 10, 12, 15%, whatever a good body fat is for them. Or, you know, we lose that umbilical fat and they find something else, right? And it just never ends. And it's like, okay, now this shit is just unhealthy. Like, you're just not happy with yourself and you're using body fat and the way that you look as like the thing to really hone in on to try to solve this problem that is much bigger than just aesthetics. So I think we have to do our jobs as coaches and we have to dig into that more specifically without, like you said, without saying, oh, that goal is bullshit. It has to be deeper 100% of the time. But I do think there is a large percentage of the time where it actually is deeper. And you know, when I was working with a lot of clients, I worked with a lot of aesthetics clients. And when we did talk about, you know, pushing that aesthetic goal, that's one question I always asked. I said, at what point will we get, what will be the metric that says that we've hit this goal? I always ask them that. And it's always a red flag when they can't answer that. Sometimes they can't answer it and we kind of talk it through and then we come up with a goal. But when they can't say, you know, certainly like, hey, when I get this, I'm going to be happy with my aesthetic profile. And I'm not going to, you know, always have to be in this caloric deficit. And I'm not going to, you know, do this yo-yo thing where I'm asking you for new macros every Sunday because I totally shit the bed throughout the week. I don't know if that answered your question, but I took both sides there.
No, it absolutely did, Carl. And what I wanted to get out of it and what I think is really beneficial for coaches listening is asking that question upon intake, upon initial consultation, and probably on a monthly basis moving forward, every time you sit down to reflect on goals and progress. So really awesome takeaway for coaches to be able to kind of listen out for that when they are working with clients that have aesthetic goals, to figure out, you know, is there a determined end goal, or is this going to be a situation where we're always going to be chasing something to arrive at some happiness, joyful end state that actually isn't defined and we're not really sure how to get there. So really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Any last functional bodybuilding thoughts or ideas you want to put out there before we wrap this thing up?
Yeah. I guess it kind of goes off of the conversation we just had, but I think it's important for coaches and clients to always let the goal be the goal. And just to be more specific, if aesthetics are the goal and that's the thing, right? The program is going to look a lot different than if having a good time in the gym while maybe improving aesthetics. Those two programs are going to look completely different. So there's no, I talk about it in terms of contractions, right? I know that we've had this conversation and I had this conversation with James as well. If the goal is to take our body through tougher contractions, or let's call it, you know, extended contractions, and let's actually call it hypertrophy, right? If the goal is to take our body through a training program or a training session to elicit the highest amount of recoverable hypertrophy, the exercise selection actually has to be more simple than complex. Okay. So if the goal is to elicit the highest amount of hypertrophy, there's absolutely no reason to think up a sexy exercise. That's it, right? Like if the goal is to elicit the most amount of hypertrophy in the quadricep, believe it or not, the leg extension is probably the best thing to do, by bar none, right? Like there's probably no other exercise that targets that specific muscle group better than the leg extension. I don't care how good it looks or how fun it is. If that's the goal, let the goal be the goal. And, you know, on the other side, if the goal is to get some hypertrophy benefits while, you know, exploring movement and having a good time, I get it. I get the sexy exercise selection, right? Like I get, you know, holding this here while you're doing this here, while you're doing that over there. I get that. But it's important for coaches and clients to understand that, you know, if the goal is to elicit hypertrophy and like hypertrophy, metabolic effect, fat loss, whatever that goal is that leads to, you know, why people do bodybuilding, like usually it's tied around aesthetics. Don't get too complex, right? And when I say complex, I just mean like, don't try to think up too many things and don't think that the program has to be overly sexy unless it's engagement that you're looking for.
I think that reminder to let the goal be the goal ties in really nicely with that initial definition you gave us, Carl. Ultimately that, you know, functional bodybuilding is going to depend on the function and the goals of the individual in front of us. It's not one way of writing a program. It's not one exercise. Of course, there are principles inside of it, but how we, you know, ultimately end up applying them and what ends up in Coach RX or on that whiteboard is going to depend on the person who's doing the workout.
Yeah, the cool thing about this whole conversation is that, you know, we can be multifaceted, right? And that's why I think a lot of people got into functional fitness is because they didn't want to just do this one thing over here in the corner and that's all they did Monday through Sunday. You know, when we start thinking about concepts around functional bodybuilding and just using that term, we start to think about fitness in a way that might be more engaging for a group of people, which I think is really positive, right? Like we can do resistance training, you know, in a given week, we can do resistance training, body weight gymnastics, we can do metabolic work, sustainable work, the whole, like we could do everything. Like that could all be in a given week. But I think what's inside of those pieces is what we have to look at really, really critically and challenge a little bit. But the concept is just so good. I like it. I love that people are thinking about these things. I love that Marcus is pushing this brand forward. I think it's good for the fitness industry as a whole.
Agreed. And so guys, remember, we do have that guide on how to program functional bodybuilding workouts. So if you haven't already, please download that thing. There's like 16 big beefy principles inside of there, a really cool client avatar and a video. So just check out the description or the notes to access that free guide. Thanks for the chat today, Carl.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Georgia.
Absolutely.